You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I am Damon Martin. He is UFC legend Matt Brown. And Matt, we are now in a post-UFC 299 world. We are in a post-Francis Ngannou getting laid out by Anthony Joshua world. We are in a world now where Jake Paul is fighting Mike Tyson on Netflix. What a weekend we had.
Man, you know, other than the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, the truth came out this weekend. That's what I felt like was like the theme of the whole weekend. You know what I mean? With like Dustin Poirier, still the fucking man, right? Sean O'Malley really is that guy. He's that fucking good. Ngannou is not a boxer, a world championship level boxer, right? Like, I feel like that was kind of the call of the weekend is the way I felt.
Yeah, you're pretty dead on there. Let's start with Ngannou, because that was obviously Friday, and then we'll move into 299 in a second. We both talked about, and I'm not going back on what I said. I picked Joshua to win the fight. I said, you know, every fiber of my being tells me he's going to win this fight. But I said, you know, Ngannou doing what he did to Fury makes me at least question it a little bit. Boy, was I wrong about that one, because it didn't look like a fight. Anthony Joshua knocked him down in the first, knocked him down again in the second, and then one of the nastiest knockouts I've seen in boxing since, I think, maybe Marquez knocked out Pacquiao in their third or fourth fight or whatever it was. Like, that was one of the nastiest knockouts I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was Pacquiao's fourth fight with Marquez. But the, you know, the problem here was that also, you know, we still, in my opinion, and this might be a little, I'm sure people would argue a lot of controversy on this, like, we still don't really know how good Ngannou is. Because in my opinion, dude, Joshua is just that good, right? He's had some bad performances and he's had some issues in there at different times where people talk shit. It looked to me, and I mean, he's looked really good in his last few fights. He hasn't been fighting world beaters, but he has looked the way we expected him to look years ago. I think he's focused and he's on point. He took this fight very serious. I also don't buy into the argument that Fury didn't take the fight serious. I think Ngannou was better than, you know, than he showed against Joshua last weekend. But Joshua's just that good right now. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch Joshua come, you know, in the next couple years, you know, whether he gets a fight with Fury or Usyk or something. I think he's got a decent chance there. And I would have said this before too, but we were always scared about his chin, you know, him taking shots bad, and we didn't get to see that.
Yeah, I hate the revisionist history that because Ngannou got knocked out, suddenly his fight with Fury doesn't matter. I don't care if Tyson Fury trained for one day or he trained for 10 hours a day every day. That's still Tyson. I said Tyson Fury off the couch should be able to do better than that against Francis Ngannou. So you can't sit here and tell me that it's just because, like what Dana said, it looked like Tyson Fury ate Tyson Fury. It's a funny line. But the reality is, like, that guy with his skill level should still be able to box up a novice 0-0 guy who's never done boxing before. Yes, I know MMA, but it's not boxing. So don't try to take away Ngannou's performance against that just because he got absolutely demolished by Anthony Joshua. Now, the problem is he is now 0-2. He got beat by Fury. Okay, that's a controversial one. We could argue about that one. But then he absolutely got outclassed by Joshua. There's no question. It lasted less than two rounds, and he got knocked out badly in that fight. Is the Francis Ngannou boxing experiment over? Like, do you think, like, at this point he needs to, like, he's been pretty honest and said, like, I still want to come back. I'm still going to do boxing. Anthony Joshua encouraged him to do it. A lot of people are saying, well, you're not going to get the Fury thing because Fury's going to fight Usyk and they have an automatic rematch clause no matter who wins. So that's probably going to take them up for the rest of this year. So they're like, what about Deontay Wilder? And I think Deontay Wilder has never been a great boxer. We saw that in the Joseph Parker fight. He's not a great boxer, but he still has that, what we always call the nuclear option. I don't know if that's the guy coming off a knockout to Anthony Joshua that you want to go in there and just trade hands and see who lands first against Deontay Wilder. So I'm like, I think at this point, like, I don't want to say it's over and I don't want to crush the guy's dreams, but he's 37. He's got a big bag of money waiting for him in the PFL. A lot less risk in PFL. Don't get me wrong. There's risk in every fight, but there's less risk. Go back to MMA. Like, you did the boxing thing. I'm happy you lived out your dream. I'm cool with it. But let's just get back to MMA where we know you're great.
Yeah, it kind of depends on, I mean, the nice thing for Ngannou right now is the world is his. Right? What does he want to do? You know, what makes him happy? What's going to get him out of bed training hard in the morning? You know, obviously, like, he's got the money now. He's set for life. His kids are set for life. If he has kids, I don't think he even has kids.
But no kids.
If he has kids, his grandkids, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's got generational wealth at this point. You know, it's got to be, you know, what gets him out of bed in the morning, what gets him excited, what gets his, you know, what's going to send a chill down his spine to get him to want to come and do some hard work and, you know, really excel in something. And if that's boxing, then he should stick with boxing. If it's MMA, then he should do MMA. I think that's what it really comes down to because, you know, he's pretty much set a solid legacy now. He's changed a lot of perceptions in this sport, especially had he not fought Joshua last weekend, right? It would change a lot more. But, you know, it's pretty fucking badass what he's done. And, you know, he could stop right now and not do nothing. And I think we'd all, you know, still bow down to him and, you know, have a lot of respect for him. Or he could, you know, he's got to just do what makes him happy, I think. You know, let's not try to prove anything to anyone. Don't go calling out Wilder. Even though I don't think Wilder's a bad matchup. You know, if he's going to stay with boxing, it doesn't make more sense to you, Damon, that he would do like a tune-up fight like boxers do. Right, like fight the 8 or 10 guy or something, you know, someone with maybe a decent name, like maybe a Joseph Parker or a, you know, which is still a dangerous guys out there, or Wallen, or you know, there's some good matchups out there for him too. Like, what's the guy's name that Joshua beat up, the white guy, Spirka or something like that?
Yeah,
you know, there's guys like that out there that, you know, he could still sell some tickets and actually learn how to box a little bit, learn how to compete in a boxing match. It's not that he doesn't know how to box. And I think that's the difference in which I've been preaching over and over about, you know, talking about this whole Joshua thing. It's not that like, he's not a good boxer. It's not that he doesn't know how to box. He doesn't know how to compete in boxing. And that takes years to learn with 3-minute rounds and 12 3-minute rounds. And it's just a different experience, a square versus a cage and, you know, ropes versus a fence and different rules. You know, there's just, you know, bigger gloves. You're wearing shoot, like so many little things.
It's so weird to say this, but I think doing as well as he did against Tyson Fury almost worked against him, because if you saw him come out in this fight, he had a lot more confidence. He switched stances, which was like he switched to southpaw like right away. And I'm like, why are you doing like it? He was doing veteran moves that he's not that much of a veteran at, you know what I mean? And so when he got knocked down that first time by just a straight jab, like it wasn't like he, you know, he just got caught by a jab. And you mentioned how good Joshua's jab has been. And I'm not a boxing expert. I'm certainly not. I'm going to sit here and say that I'm a boxing expert. I'm not a boxing journalist. But I know enough about the sport to know that what caught Ngannou on Friday night was not the highest level boxing that you'd ever seen. It was a pretty simple formula for Joshua. He hit him with three right hands, and they were all pretty much right in the same area, like one, two straights and one kind of overhand. And the third one that knocked him out was he was kind of already wobbled on his feet, and Joshua just laid him out at that point. Like that was almost like, you know, it's like you shot the deer with a bow, and it was like not quite dead yet. You got to put it out of its misery. Like that's kind of what he did. And the guy was out on his feet, and he just blasted with that right hand and put him down. But yeah, I always wonder if like it backfired because like everyone was talking him up. Man, you almost beat Tyson Fury. You did beat Tyson Fury. You got screwed on the decision. You knocked him down. Oh my God, what a performance! And then he comes out. And he had a little bit more swagger in his step, a little more confidence, and Anthony Joshua knocked that shit right out of him.
Yeah, yeah. You know, speaking, you know, I have heard a lot of people say that. I was reading on social media and Twitter and stuff. You know, the like, dude, he can't even block like a basic straight right or something. But when you're talking about boxing, you're talking about there's not that many weapons at all anyway. And the most simple basic thing that we call most simple and basic is still the highest level thing there is. And that's why, again, competing in boxing, that's what I mean by that. Like he's only competed in two boxing matches now. Really one. Right. Like one doesn't even really count, right? All that sparring that you've done in boxing only counts a little bit in terms of the range, the distance. Joshua has done that hundreds of times. He did it in the Olympics and the amateurs. He did it in, you know, how many pro bouts does he have now? He's got a decent, like he's done this so many times. So that shit that we call simple and basic, you know, he's just done that simple, basic thing thousands of times in a ring.
Yeah. It's like I understand like making the transition from MMA to boxing is easier than making it from boxing to MMA. We all understand. I think even boxers would agree with that. Like it's not because MMA fighters do train boxing, right? But
boxers would agree with it more. Most of them are pretty clueless. Like they're almost, there's a lot of boxers that are about as clueless as the guy at the bar. This is, I just see red.
There's an art form to it. Like, you know what I mean? There is learning to do it and doing it and do it. Boxing for MMA is different than boxing, straight up boxing, the way you stand, the way you throw your punches, the angles, all that kind of stuff's different. And so, yeah, I mean, listen, I want Ngannou to live his dreams. If he really wants to stick around in boxing and do another fight and fight Deontay Wilder and get paid another big bag of money, good for him. Deontay's coming off a loss. I think Deontay's kind of at that point now. He's like 38. You know, he's not. I mean, I think we know who Deontay Wilder is, and I think we saw that in the Parker fight. Like Joseph Parker has kind of always been a little bit of a, I'm not going to say journeyman, just like a mid-level guy. Like, again, there's nothing wrong. I said this the other day on the podcast. There's nothing wrong with being the number six guy in a division. Like, I know a lot of people take it as an insult. It's not, because if there's 1,000 boxers and you're the number six guy out of all those guys, that's not terrible. But I don't think Joseph Parker until recently had anyone said, man, this guy is like, you know, top of the world. And then, you know, I mean, credit, he did beat Zhang on Friday night too, which how that guy gets two knockdowns and still loses a decision is beyond me. But, if he wants to stick around and do it, good for him. I do kind of hope he goes back to MMA because like, that's where we know he's good. Although I will say, like, is he going to get as excited to fight Heenan Ferreira as he would Deontay Wilder? I mean, no offense to Heenan Ferreira, but like, you know, which one are you going to get more? Like, I'm going to get paid $20 million to fight Deontay Wilder and get excited, or I'm going to get paid $10 million to fight Heenan Ferreira and don't really care. Like, it's Heenan Ferreira. Like, it's not a fight that gets me up. It's not John Jones. It's not Stipe. It's not Tom Aspinall. I mean, maybe boxing's a better choice. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Like I said, I just hope he doesn't really listen to everybody else's advice and he just does what he loves, man. You know, he's at that point where, like you said, 38 years old now, 37, 38.
37,
Yeah, look, he's got to live his life. You know, enjoy yourself, bro. You know, he's got enough money now. He's cool. So, you know, good for him. He's done what nobody else has been able to do except Conor. except, you know, he actually almost beat Fury. You know, he was almost the heavyweight champion of the world. So, you know, let's just do what makes you happy now at this point, in my opinion.
I know it's hard to say this after watching him get knocked out, and it was a bad knockout, but Francis Ngannou's already won. Like, that dude's playing with house money at this point. Like, he already won at life. Like, do I feel bad for him getting knocked out? Of course. I don't want to see anyone get knocked out like that. Like, that's a vicious knockout, and I'm sure health-wise you got to be concerned because, you know, knockouts can – we talked about that on the show before, you know, when you talked about your knockout versus concussion thing. When we're talking about Volkanovski, like, who knows? Maybe, you know, I hope he's fine. I hope nothing adverse came of that knockout. But in terms of, like, his career, in terms of where he's at, dude, this guy already won. Like, he already won 10 times over with the money he's made, the living out his dream of going to boxing when he couldn't do that in the UFC. Again, he's a winner. Every way, shape, and form, whatever he does next is up to him. Me, personally, I'd like to see him come back to MMA, but if he wants to stick around in boxing and fight Deontay Wilder, or maybe, you know, wait for Fury, how can you really not give him his due? Like, he's earned that. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, you know, how much or how excited actually are you seeing him come back to MMA and fight Henan Ferreira?
Not really at all. So yeah. I mean,
you say, you know, you say like, hey, I'm excited. I'd be more excited if he came back to MMA. I'd love, but against Henan Ferreira.
Yeah.
Again, I think Henan Ferreira is a good fighter. I think he could probably give Ngannou a good match. But, you know, it's not a name. You know, he could be the greatest fighter in the world. Without that name value, it's not going to excite any of us.
Yeah, if he was coming back to fight John Jones, it'd be a different story. But we know that's not happening. And that's the downside of the heavyweight division. Like, it's a paper-thin division. And when 9 out of the 10 top fighters in the world are in the UFC and the one guy who's not is Francis Ngannou, it's a problem because you don't really have any competition there. So yeah, but again, like I said, whatever he chooses to do, I'm happy for him. If he goes back to MMA, good for him. If he stakes in boxing, good for him. I feel bad he got knocked out, and you know, that was a rough one, but you know, that's the sport, that's combat sports, man. You never know. Like I said, I mean, we've seen a lot of guys get knocked out who you would never imagine get knocked out, and that's just part of the sport. So, you know, again, whatever he's doing, man, he's already a winner at life. So
I think that's a best way to put it, man. He's won in life. He got it done. It's been a great legacy. Almost became the heavyweight boxing champion of the world. In a lot of opinions, he did, right? But here we are. So good for him, man.
Yeah. Now, you said something at the top of the show that I'm going to disagree with you about. We talked about 299. You said this is the truth came out. The truth came out. And you said Sean O'Malley is that dude. But disagree with you a little bit right there, Matt Brown. Here's why I'm saying that. He obviously went out there and beat the brakes off Chito Vera. It was an incredibly impressive performance in that regard. It was, he just boxed him up and beat him up. How he didn't get a knockout in the second round with that knee up the middle when he literally, it sounded like a baseball bat, got smacked across Chito Vera's face. I don't know how that, to this, like, that is like, we're talking about chins? Good Christ almighty, how that is the best chin ever to take a shot like that and keep going. But here's why I say I'm not as impressed, and it's not because it wasn't an impressive performance. It was, but it's nothing I didn't necessarily expect going into it. You know, Chito is a good fighter, and I said that's, I think that's the guy I referenced on the last podcast when I said the number six guy in the world. There's nothing wrong with being the number six guy in the world, but when you watch a title fight, you expect to see the two best guys in that weight class fight. I don't think anyone is going to mistake Chito Vera as one of the two best bantamweights in the world. Maybe not the top five best bantamweights in the world. And I think that's where I'm saying, like, it was impressive, but I don't know that I learned that much more about Sean O'Malley than I didn't already know. I learned more in the Aljamain Sterling fight, but that one I was like, yeah, I expected him to win. And I think the thing I was most impressed with was the fact that Chito somehow survived.
Right, right. You're not actually agreeing with me there. Maybe you're trying to, but you're not. I'm just saying that was the truth. He's going to beat Chito Vera, you know, 99 out of 100 times, you know, as long as his ankle holds up, right? Like, he's that guy, you know, to beat him. I'm still picking Merab to beat him. I mean, God, Merab is just a killer, man. Like, you know, his wrestling is just insane. So, I hope that fight happens. You know, it sounded like Sean's willing to take it. I know he was calling out Ilya Topuria, you know, wanting to do that, which I think would be an awesome fight, to be honest. I'm not huge on these go up in weight straight away, you know, like after you defend it five, six, seven times, okay, I get it. I love that kind of stuff, right? With GSP, Anderson Silva, John Jones, defending your belt over and over and showing that you're the best. And I think it, I don't know, to me, like that earns more respect. Like if you go up double champ, I think it gets you more famous, right? Like more people are going to talk about it. And you know, he's a double champ. It's going to say all these things. But if you defend your belt seven, eight, nine times, at least in my weird little world that I live in, like I'm going to respect that even more.
Oh, I agree with you 110%. I said on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, I said I think there should be a minimum five title defenses before you can even contemplate moving up a division. Because if you've defended the title five times, you've kind of settled yourself into like a solid role as champion, right? Like you are a defending, you've cleared out a lot of the contenders. Because people were arguing with me saying, oh, five's too many, it should be three. And I was like, do you really, like I said this and it's not his fault. But I said, do you realize Islam Makhachev has been champion? He has two title defenses and he has yet to be an actual lightweight. His two title defenses are against Volkanovski. Like, wouldn't you like to see him fight, you know, Sarukian
Right.
or Gaethje or one of these guys? Like, so I get it. And I think I'm with you when you talk about, like, it's more about the fame than it is about the accomplishment now. Like, Ilya Topuria is a killer. He's a very, very good fighter. But we haven't, he hasn't even defended his title once. So is it going to mean more to beat him? Or to beat the guy in Merab in your own division who's on a 10-fight winning streak, he's absolutely mauling everybody, and he is clearly the number one contender. Like, I understand Topuria might be, quote-unquote, a bigger fight because it's champ versus champ and all that kind of stuff, but, like, to me, if you're going to go up a division and try to become champion, and I know Conor kind of ruined this because he beat Aldo, which was a massive win, and then he goes right up and fights Eddie Alvarez, or that was after the Nate Diaz fights. He went up and fought Eddie Alvarez, but went up and fought Eddie Alvarez and beat Eddie. And Eddie's a good fighter. Eddie's a legend, but I don't think anyone's going to mistake Eddie as like one of the greatest lightweights of all time. Very good fighter. Don't get me wrong, but like he wasn't that guy. But imagine if George St. Pierre at the time had gone up and beat Anderson Silva. That would have meant so much more because Anderson was like a huge long reigning champion. Nobody could touch him. Imagine if Anderson had gone up and beaten John Jones, you know, that would have meant more. When
and,
Israel,
and to add to that, you know, you're also talking about guys like even, okay, let's say GSP had one defense and then went up and fought Anderson that already had eight or nine or whatever. I don't know the exact timeline, but just hypothetically, you know, that's very different than Sean O'Malley with one title defense going up and fighting Ilya Topuria in his first title defense.
Yeah.
Right? Like two guys that are rookies at being champion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It just, like I said, to me, the champ versus champ thing is supposed to be special, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not special when it's that. Like, would it be a big fight? Would I watch? Sure. But I'm way more interested in seeing O'Malley against Merab. I want to see how he deals with that pressure, with that pace, with that wrestling, with that conditioning. You know, I mean, Merab is not going to stand in front of Sean O'Malley and duke it out with him for five rounds like Chito Vera. I mean, Chito Vera is a striker. That's what he does, and he's just not as good a striker as Sean O'Malley. Hits like a truck, very durable guy, we know that, but like, I don't think anyone's going to mistake Chito Vera as being the highest-level striker in that division. I think Corey Sandhagen is a better example. I think Corey and Sean O'Malley would be a great fight. I think Sean O'Malley and Merab, these are the fights I want to see. I want to see him against, if he keeps winning, I want to see him against Umar. Like, Umar Nurmagomedov's coming up. Like, I want to see those. And then Ilya, you know, Ilya's going to rematch Volkanovski. We have to kind of imagine that's going to happen. I don't know that he'll win, but man, after watching what Brian Ortega did to Yair Rodriguez a couple weeks ago, like, I'm not crying if he gets in that title contention talk again. And you got Movsar Evloev, freaking wrestling monster out there, who's an incredible guy. Like, you know, he's not going to just stand in front of Ilya Topuria and trade strikes. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing him in there as well. So, like, let's let these guys establish themselves as champions, defend it three or four times, and then let's revisit this conversation. Because right now, what would it really mean? Like, yeah, okay, let's just say he wins. Great, you won two championships. Is that as good as being a five-time defending champion in what I believe is the deepest weight class in the sport right now, bantamweight? Like, I think bantamweight's become the best division in MMA. Like, that means more to me, but I don't know. I get it. I understand the fame and the hype and all that, but yeah, fight Merab. That's the one everyone wants to see.
And the problem is that it makes so much sense for both of those guys, Ilya and Sean O'Malley, to do it, right? If you're Ilya Topuria, you're a striker, and you're going to have a striker come up and that's smaller than you. And, Ilya's more of a knockout guy, right? Like Sean's probably, he's not really a knockout guy so much. He's certainly got some knockouts, but he's a sniper, right? And Ilya's more of a knockout guy. He's like, bring an undersized guy up to my weight class. That's a huge star. That's a huge social media star. It's going to be a gigantic fight if it happens, right? It makes sense for him. Makes sense for Sean O'Malley. Okay, obviously, like, okay, now I don't have to fight Marab. Now I get to move up and, at least have a chance, against a striker. If he believes he's the better striker, right? He's going to go up against a striker, not have to cut weight, get potential double champ status. Like, it makes so much sense for both of them that it makes it hard, right? To excuse me, sorry, I'm keep burping. If you're, the UFC or a purist like us, like we don't want to see it. We want it to be pure, right? We want both of them to defend their titles, and maybe hopefully they both defend it 5 times, and then we see them, 2 or 3 years from now. But as in terms of both of them vying for that fight, it makes 1,000% sense for both of them to do that.
Yeah, I think the realization though is I think most people kind of see through it. Like I don't think people are screaming for it. You know what I mean? Like even Sean said before the fight, he's like he was calling out Ilya, and then like everyone else was like, "You got to fight Marab," and he's like, "Well, I guess kind of people want me to fight Marab." And he's openly said he would fight Marab. He's openly said like he'll take that fight. He's not turning it down or trying to say run away from Marab. But I think the public is kind of on that too. Like they're like, "All right, like we get it. I understand why you want it, but like." Fight Marab, fight the dude who's absolutely earned his shot, who probably should have. I mean, after watching what I watched on Saturday night, was there any doubt that Marab would have done better than that? I mean, sorry, Cheeto, but like, I'd commend the hell out of you for sticking in there. But dude, like you just got your face broken, your body beaten up, and you probably lost like 3 years off your life for that fight because that was pretty bad. I would hope Marab would do better than that, and I assume he will. So, yeah, fight Marab. I get it. I'm with you. You're right. Like, for both those guys, like, if O'Malley loses, he's like, well, I lost to the bigger, stronger featherweight. Great. I still got my bantamweight title, and as you said, what's more dangerous, fighting a motivated, pissed off Volkanovski or fighting a guy who's 135 pounder who doesn't really have knockout power like that in your division? Yeah, bring me that guy, and he's a superstar. So yeah, I get it, but yeah, I don't have like. Would it be a fun fight potentially? But do I care? I don't care at all about that fight. Like I have no interest in really seeing that fight personally.
Yeah, I would be interested in that fight. But I also think that Marab should be fighting Sean O'Malley. He 1,000% deserves it. I think Volkanovski should get the rematch and fight Ilya again. And I think this fight hopefully, happens at some point down the road. But I don't think it will. I think, Marab's going to beat Sean O'Malley. I've been singing praise for Marab for a long time now. And, and he's done nothing but prove me right so far. So I think, I think it's going to be a tough road for anybody in front of him for a long time. And, Volkanovski, he's definitely that guy, or Ortega, those guys are tough matchups. And I personally haven't seen Ilya. I just coincidentally have missed a lot of his fights, have other things to do that night or whatever. So I can't really speak, but that Volkanovski and Ortega are absolute tough fights. I don't care how good you are. At that level, there's so little differences between number one and two and three. And, so he's going to have to stay right on point, firing on all 8 cylinders to be either one of those guys.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And I want to see, like I said, I want to see those fights. I want to see, Volkanovski deserves his rematch because he was a long reigning champion. He was a guy. And I think if Marab becomes champion, not to say he can't be a star, because I think he is getting that kind of attention now a little bit, but now that Aljamain's a featherweight, I think Marab's going to stick a bantamweight and fight all the guys. Like he would fight O'Malley, he would fight Corey, he would fight Umar. Like I think Marab has kind of like his head screwed on where he wants to be like a long reigning bantamweight champion. So
I'll tell you what would be an exciting fight is if Marab and Volk both win, maybe go on little win streaks, and then Marab comes up.
You never know. It depends on how Aljamain does. Aljamain's got a fight against Calvin Kattar at UFC 300. If he wins that one, he jumps right in the mix too. And Aljamain, obviously, you know, former champion, big kid. I think it'll be interesting to see what he could do at featherweight. So, yeah, lots of interesting stuff.
That would be an interesting fight against Volkanovski also. But Merab, I mean, I think he's an interesting fight against just about everybody. But if, particularly against like a Volkanovski type guy who's so slick and, you know, when we've seen him fight Islam, he kept it close the whole time. You know, he was a step behind the whole time, but he kept it real close. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I think it'd be an interesting fight.
Yeah, it could be. It could be.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Speaking of more interesting fights at 299, Dustin, let me just go ahead and say the name right now and forgive my language. Dustin fucking Poirier. Holy shit, man. What a war that was. Benoit Saint-Denis came to battle and Dustin put him out with a vicious right hand. And did I remember correctly that I picked Dustin Poirier on the podcast and you picked Benoit Saint-Denis? Did I remember that correctly, Matt Brown? Did I remember that correctly?
Got it, buddy. Get one every now and then.
Yeah, I get him right every now and again.
About every 5 years or so. When was Aldo McGregor 6?
That's like 9 years. It feels like 9 years ago at this point. I think it is 9 years ago. It's 2015. I think it was 2015 when that fight happened.
God, we're fucking old.
I know.
I have a great call on that, man. And you know, once they started battling, I mean, it was about, I don't know, 10 seconds in, I was like, I think I called this wrong. And even though, like, Saint-Denis was doing well, too, right? I mean, they were fucking going at it. Like you said, they fucking went at it. But I was like, this is the kind of, I think I said it about 20, 30 seconds in the fight. I said, this is the kind of fight that Dustin Poirier wins every time. Like, you can't fight him like that. You have to be tactical and skillful. Like, you cannot just make it a brawl, bro.
Yeah, Dustin, like, the only guy who can do that with Dustin is Justin Gaethje. That's it. Like, no one else can do it. Like, I love Michael Chandler. Even he can't do that. He tried to do it and did well, and then he still got caught. So,
to be fair, the time that Dustin beat Gaethje, it was more of a brawl than when Gaethje beat him, right?
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, but it was – and again, like – Benoit Saint-Denis didn't really lose any stock because he brought it to him, man. That was a freaking battle for as long as it lasted. That dude has nothing to be ashamed about. But Man, it's just so funny. Like, everyone was kind of like, I mean, Dustin was a pretty sizable underdog, and everyone was kind of crowning Benoit St. Denis as, like, the next guy. This is his crown. This is the moment when he achieves that. And boy, did Dustin Poirier silence all the doubters and say, hold on now, I'm still here. Like, hold on, let's just wait a minute here. And, whoo, boy, what a knockout that was.
Yeah, he looked great, too, man. He looked great shape, looked motivated. Yeah, and that was kind of my argument was I was thinking, like, he's probably just not as motivated. Just an assumption, you know, and that's why I picked St. Denis. I was just assuming, but I thought he looked great. Thought he looked motivated and in great shape. And like I said, you just can't fight him that way. You got to fight him a certain way. And if you're going to go in and try to brawl with him, like you said, the best brawlers, probably some of the best brawlers in the UFC, like Chandler and Gaethje, and like they learn different. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it does not work very well with Dustin Poirier, man. And he, like I said, dude, good for him, man. I was so happy for him. Dustin's a really, like, Dustin's one of those guys, like, legitimately good dudes, you know what I mean? Like, not that it matters, I understand. Like, it's a sport. Like, you know, I don't have to, like, I think Sean Strickland's a lunatic, and I don't agree with about 95% of what he says, but I can still agree he's a good fighter. But Dustin Poirier is, like, a legitimately good dude, and, like, it's always, you know, it's always nice to see a good guy like that just kind of come out on top. Now, here's the question, Matt, because afterwards, you know, he said that he wants Islam in June, and June, because I know Ali, Islam's manager, kind of said that to him before the fight, kind of like, what about June, Islam? And Islam's kind of seems into it as well. International Fight Week, you know, maybe in June. Obviously, we know we got Gaethje and Max fighting at 300. We got Armin and Charles fighting at 300, but that's April. That would be a pretty quick turnaround to fight in June, April 13th to June 29th for International Fight Week. What about Dustin getting in there with Islam? What do you think about that?
Yeah, why not? Give him a shot.
So,
yeah, that's all I got to say about it. Why not? Let's go. Dustin deserves everything, bro. Anything he wants, he should get.
Usually in this situation, I'll be honest, I was already a little pissed that the UFC said Armin and Charles was the number one contender fight because Justin knocked out Dustin Poirier, and they said, you're getting it. Because that's after he beat Fazeev. They're like, okay, you're getting a title shot. Now, it sucks on timing that that Oliveira got the cut, and he couldn't fight Islam last October and ended up being Volkanovski. Certainly not Justin's fault. I thought Justin was going to slide right in and just get the title shot against Islam, but then they announced him and Max at 300. In any other world right now, I'd be like, you know what, man, it's not even fair to Charles and Armin because that's a great fight too. But really, would anyone actually complain if Dustin Poirier got a title shot in June? Would anyone really complain that much? Because I know I wouldn't.
Yeah, you can't complain anytime Dustin Poirier gets a title shot. Like I said, he's the man. He deserves anything they give him, you know? Anything good. Yeah. Any kind of shot, just give it to him. It's fucking Dustin Poirier, man. I mean, has he ever put on a bad fight? I mean, you know, he's been beat, right? Which I, you know, if you don't call that a bad fight, you call that a bad fight. But, you know, he goes out there and goes to war every time and does his thing, does it with respect and honor and, you know, carries himself well, speaks well. Just a fucking great guy. I want to see nothing but good things in the world for Dustin Poirier for the rest of his life. And give him the fucking title shot. Let's go.
Even though you didn't pick him, Matt Brown, even though you did pick against him in that fight, you were the guy after he lost to Gaethje when he was kind of like, maybe I'll walk away, maybe I'll be done. And you were the guy who said, no, don't walk away. Like, you got fight left in you. Like, I see that in you. You were encouraging Dustin to stick around, and sure enough, he did, and what we saw last weekend. But yeah, like, really, is anyone actually, like, I understand I would feel bad for Justin or Armin or Charles, however it plays out, but come on now. Like, Dustin's just like that dude. Like, I think in the back of their minds, they'd probably be like, yeah, it sucks, but good for Dustin. Like, and you know what? I don't know that I favor anyone to beat Islam Makhachev right now. Like, outside of Khabib getting back in shape and deciding he wants to be champion again and fighting his brother, which we all know is never going to happen, I don't know that I'd pick anyone to beat Islam right now just because of how good he is and how on top of his game he is. But Dustin Poirier is that kind of guy who will give you a fight. He will bring the dog out in you, and he will make it a fight. Now, will he win? I don't know. He didn't beat Khabib, and I think Khabib is... at least on paper, was a slightly superior version of Islam. Now, Islam's striking has gotten pretty nasty lately to where maybe he's getting even beyond that. But and Dustin, you know, he pulled the ghillie. He loved to pull the ghillie. He tried to pull the ghillie on Khabib, but it didn't work out, and he ended up getting beaten that fight. But would I favor Dustin to win? No. But do I know Dustin would make it a fight? Do I know Dustin would go in there and make it a war for however long it lasted? Sure. So, yeah, dude, if they want to give him the title shot, dude, give him the title shot. I got no problem with that. And do I think he would beat Islam? In my head right now, I'd say no. But does he have a chance? It's Dustin fucking Poirier. Of course he has a chance.
Yeah, and I think the one thing we got to be careful, too, is, like, emotionally, yeah. Like, I think, you know, we would all be – nobody would complain if Dustin Poirier gets a title shot. But we got to remember, like, Justin Gaethje just knocked him out in this last fight.
Yeah.
Right? We can't forget that.
Yeah.
You know, if he gets it over Justin Gaethje, I think that's a problem.
Yeah. And the only reason I say it's a problem is if Justin goes out there and beats Holloway, then it's kind of hard to do that at that point. You know what I mean?
I forgot they're fighting. Yeah, even better. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, I think it all depends on timing, because if Holloway and Gaethje have a freaking 5-round just bloody battle, I don't think either one of them would be ready to turn around and fight in June. You know what I mean? So, I agree. Justin, like I said, I feel for Justin because I think Justin should have just gotten the title shot, but because of timing and injuries and the way cards are playing out, he ended up getting Max Holloway. Here's what the UFC should do. The UFC wants to save the argument so you don't have to deal with this. They need to announce Islam versus Dustin before 300. That way they can't say, well, Charles won or Armin won or Justin won. Well, we already booked the title fight, so, you know, like, we're going with what was already booked. That's the way they get around it. They go ahead and book it now, so that way when 300, then they can say, oh, whoever looks better out of those two fights will get the winner of Dustin and Islam. You know, do it that way. Don't wait until after 300 to announce it. You wait till after 300, then you're screwing yourself, because then everyone's going to complain about either Justin or whoever, you know, whoever won that fight. Announce it in the next 2 weeks. Dustin Poirier against Islam Makhachev, headlining UFC 303 International Fight Week, and then no one can complain because they announced it before anything else happens.
Well, it's a good position to be in, because there's some real killers in that division. Boy, Islam's got his work cut out for him. Like you said, they're all, you know, Islam's a killer. I wouldn't pick him to lose against anybody, but a murderer's row like that, he gets through those guys, you know, no matter how this plays out. Man, he gets 4 or 5 title defenses. Like, what a fucking run, huh?
Yeah, dude, it'd be incredible. And it'd be insane to go do that. So, I mean, Dustin Poirier, give him whatever he wants. But here, we got to get on this real quick, because before we get out of here, I do want to mention the Jake Paul Tyson thing, but I want to come back to that in a second. One other fight I wanted to mention from 299 was Michael Venom Page making his debut against Kevin Holland. Now, this is your division, Matt. You're welterweight your entire career. What'd you think of Michael Venom Page's debut?
You know, we said it beforehand, man, Holland is a tough matchup for anybody. And, you know, it wasn't the most exciting fight, but, you know, he's not an easy guy to beat, especially in your debut. So you got to give MVP his props where they're due. I think it's going to be interesting to watch him come up through the division or work his way through the division, however it plays out. I think there are some bad matchups out there for him. I think there's some tough fights for him. I didn't see anything where I think he's going to be the next champion. But you got to give props where props are due. You know, beating Kevin Holland is no easy task, and, you know, he got it done. So, you know, and you know, he is an eccentric guy. He's a fun guy to watch. He gets the right matchup and he goes in and he's going to put on a hell of a show. So, you know, I think he's a great addition to the division. I'm not sure it really, it wasn't like so impressive. I'm like, oh, he's going to, you know, work this division or anything. So he's a cool guy to be in the division, I think, is kind of the moral of the story.
Yeah, I think it's got to be the right matchups for him. Like, you can't, like, if you watch, like, what that Jack Della Maddalena Gilbert Burns fight? That was a freaking amazing fight. Watching Jack go out there and beat Gilbert Burns, knock him out the way he did, holy crap. And now you want Shavkat? Like, I don't know that Michael Venom Page is going to do well against the Shavkats and that kind of, you know, like, now here's one that no one has mentioned because everyone's talking about Wonder Boy. I understand. What about Michael Venom Page against Ian Garry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now that's a matchup I'd pay to see.
You know, like, wouldn't that be more fun?
I mean, they're both in right in the right spots in the division for it too, right?
Yeah. Like, wouldn't that be a fun one? Like, you know?
What was Ian's last fight? Was it Neil Magny or was he fight since that?
He had to fight Jeff Neal. Remember the Jeff Neal fight?
Yeah. They're right in the right spot to make that fight. That's a great call, Damon. I'm with you.
Yeah, that would be a fun one, right? Like, just get a little something different. I know he wants Colby, but I don't think Colby's going to fight anybody right now. I think Colby's going to sit out until they either give him another title shot or he just retires because Colby doesn't seem to want to fight anybody. Yeah, do it. Venom Page against Garry. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
That is the proper matchup. Yeah, I agree. Or even, you know, Jeff Neal. Well, I mean, I guess he's coming off a win. MVP is, so that's probably not going to happen, but... Dude, yeah, that is an exciting match because that puts Ian to a real test too, a guy that knows how to strike with them.
Yeah.
Right? Not that these other guys don't, but, you know, yeah, that's the right matchup in all parts that I can think in my head right now.
Yeah, I think that'd be a fun one. So, Sean Shelby, give me a call. I just did your job for you. Before we get out of here, Matt, I know, UFC 299 was the talk of the weekend, Francis Ngannou, but we didn't get to talk about it, so I got to talk about it. What was your reaction when you saw Jake Paul fighting Mike Tyson in July, Cowboy Stadium, on Netflix? I woke up to the news, and I was like, am I dreaming right now? Am I in some sort of fever dream right now? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. What was your reaction? You tell me first. You go first on that one.
So my first reaction was I thought Jake was done with this, kind of like the gimmick fights. Now, yes, I understand Mike Tyson is a former heavyweight champion, a real boxer, all that I get. But Mike Tyson is going to be 58 years old. Did Mike Tyson look good against Roy Jones Jr. in that exhibition a few years ago? He sure did. Guess what? Roy Jones Jr. also lost to Anthony Pettis like a year ago. Like, he's 58.
Like, Roy hasn't looked good for a long time.
But he's 58.
Roy was one of the top 10 greatest in history, and he went straight off a cliff, though.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know, man. Like, I just, like...
I think that is the reaction everybody... Exactly what you just said. I don't know, man. like, am I going to watch this? Like, I know I am. But, like, who's going to fucking pay to go to Cowboy Stadium to watch this? Does anybody care that much?
Yeah, like, it's on Netflix, so that's working for him. Like, it's going to be on, like, I already get Netflix, so I'll be able to watch it. Like, I don't have to pay anything extra for that. But, this isn't even, like, when Floyd fought Logan, like, when Floyd fought Logan Paul, there was a little bit of appeal because, you know, Floyd was still, like, at the very tail end of his career. And you had the freak show factor of Logan being so much bigger, you know, and that kind of thing. But, like, Tyson's 58. Like.
Yeah, I like you said, you know, we're all going to watch it. But, like, what do we want out of this? Do we want Mike Tyson to knock out Jake Paul? Yeah. You know, like Jake, obviously, like, he's doing that because he wants to be in that position where everybody wants to see him get knocked out. And that's why they're going to watch. He wants to be the heel. But it's a 60-year-old man, so he's probably going to be able to pull it out, right? But, like that's an obvious storyline there. You know what I mean? We know the plot here. We know the narrative, right? That you're not, you know, it's not Tyrone Woodley where we're like, okay, you know, if Jake's a decent boxer, he'll probably win, but it's a fucking great athlete he's going against that never boxed, right? Like, this is just fucking garbage, man. That's all it's just straight fucking garbage. And it, as freak show as it is, I'm not against these freak show fights. I'm cool with it. You know, like, it doesn't bother me. I think it's kind of fun, but this is garbage. Like, I'm not excited about this. And I know I'm going to fucking watch just like you, just like everybody else. But it's garbage.
Like- Well, here's my biggest thing, and I very well in this show. I've defended Jake Paul many, many times, and I'll defend him. You know, good for him getting. I don't care that he boxes and he does whatever he does. Good for him. He has done good things in the sport. He brings attention. I don't care. None of that bothers me. I'm not like a purist. It's like always ruining the sanctity of boxing. Have you watched boxing? That's the promoters of boxing have done fucked up the sanctity of boxing decades ago. So don't tell me about that. But I said this a while ago with Jake, and I said, Jake needs to pick his lane. If he wants to be a championship boxer, he needs to stand. If he's serious, and I'm fine with that, if he's serious. I'm not saying that beating Ryan Borland and Andre August are going to make you a world champion, but they are guys with boxing experience. As shitty as they may have been, one guy was an Uber driver. I don't care. They actually had real boxing experience on their records. You're doing what the typical boxer would do. Canelo did it. You know, Terrence Crawford did it. Every major boxer goes to that 10, 15 fights where they're just beating up people, learning their craft, learning how to do things, fighting a southpaw, whatever it is you're doing. That's typical. But then to go backwards in a way, to go back to the freak show fight, like you were getting away from it. I'm going to be a purist. I'm going to be a boxer. Okay. Now you're going back to this. And not only that, you're fighting a boxer, but you're fighting a 58-year-old man who hasn't boxed professionally in 20 years. He boxed an exhibition against an also old Roy Jones Jr., who is not the same Roy Jones Jr. that we knew from a decade ago, whatever it was. He hasn't boxed professionally in 20 years. What does that do for you? Like, if you go out there and you humiliate and you knock out Mike Tyson, are you really going to feel good about that? Like, I'm not a fighter, Matt. I'm not a fighter. I know I'm not a fighter. But if I got into a fight with a fucking 70-year-old dude, I don't care who he was 30 years ago, I'm not going to feel good about myself knocking out a 70-year-old guy.
I think that's probably the biggest thing here. It's like, it's a lose-lose for him. Obviously, he's going to get a bag, right? We're all going to watch it. I'm sure Netflix is paying him good. You know, like, we're all going to watch it. We're going to talk about it. He's getting that. But it's a lose-lose in the actual fight. Like, you can't lose to a 60-year-old man, and you also can't beat a 60-year-old man. You know, it's a lose-lose. So, like I said, it's garbage to me, man. And I'm all about the sideshows. I'd love to see him fight more sideshows, more fucking, you know, go fight Mike Perry. I think that'd be fucking awesome. I think that's who he should be fighting, right? Grab Mike Perry, get Mike Perry a bag. He's obviously the fucking a star in BKFC now. Everybody's talking about him. He would make a great promo guy. I mean, we could name a lot of guys like this, right? That'd be perfect matchups, sideshow matchups. A lot of these. Mike Tyson is not it. Leave the guy alone. And I'm surprised Mike even took it. That's what I'm the most surprised about. I don't know what Mike is thinking here, what makes him want to do it. You know, I don't think he's hurting for money. I don't think he's I don't think he has a huge urge to fight. He talks about it all the time. He doesn't want to be that guy no more. So it's very odd to me that he's taking the fight. That's the odd part to me.
Yeah, it's kind of out of left field, right? Like, it's not like Mike is, like, after he did the Roy Jones thing, it's not like he's done other exhibitions and stayed busy. And, you know, he did that one. And again, to his credit, that night, he surprised a lot of people, myself included. I was like, damn, like, Tyson didn't look nearly as bad as I thought he would. But he didn't look nearly as bad as I thought he would against another guy who was older.
Right.
You know, I mean, you said it. Roy Jones Jr. fell off a cliff, for lack of a better word. That's what he did. He fell off a cliff, and he lost to Anthony Pettis a year and a half ago, whatever it was. Like, as you said, it's a lose-lose. Like, what? I'm with you. I'm agreeing 110% with you, Matt. Like, I don't care that he does the freak show fights. Go fight Mike Perry. We said before, like, I think you had the quote. You're like, that's one guy he does not want to see on the other end of that contract is Mike Perry, because that dude's a fucking savage. I agree. But at least that would be a competitive fight with a guy you know can punch, and he's, you know, 30 years old. He's in the prime of his career. Even if he's not a boxer, you know he's going to go in there and give you a fucking fight. Like, you know what I mean? Like I'm using this as a, listen, this is our boy. This is our guy, right? But like they're making a movie about Mark Kerr right now, right? Like Mark Kerr, the Smashing Machine, and our boy Mark Coleman is going to be a part of that movie because he was a big part of Mark Kerr's life. Mark Kerr comes down to your gym right now and says, Matt, we're going to do an exhibition. You and me, Would you feel good about beating Mark Kerr at fucking 60 years old or whatever he is now? Like, would you really feel good about, or beating Boss Rutan? Like, would you feel good beating Boss now at 60 with like two hip replacements or whatever else he's got going on? Like, I can't imagine you'd feel good about yourself beating up that guy at this level. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, dude, I spar with Coleman. He's a nut. You know, like, he wants to get, I spar with him, and I'm like, I feel bad, you know, even sparring with him, right? I do more body shots. I don't even really hit his head. Like, he's same age, you know? So, yeah, it's, like I said, it's just garbage to me, man. But, it, again, it really surprised me that Mike Tyson took this fight. I'm not sure what his motivation is. But what I hope for, just like I'm sure everybody hopes for, is that Mike Tyson – you know, has that young 20-year-old rage, gets on some fucking steroids, does some trends, some check drops, and he goes in there, bites fucking Jake Paul's ear, and, you know, knocks him the fuck out, and Jake Paul never wants to box an old man again.
Yeah, but you know, the reality is it's probably going to leave us all very sad when it's over, though. That's the probably the other reality of it.
I think that's probably a better version of what's going to happen. But, you know, Mike Tyson's a fucking freak, dude. He's been a freak since he was born. So, you know, and that's kind of the appeal of a fight, right? Is Mike Tyson is a fucking freak. So he might pull something out, right?
He might, but man, I just don't get it. I was like, is this real? Like, are they making a movie and they're like fucking with us? Like, is this real? I guess it is. So, you know, I guess July we'll find out how real it is. As you said, who's going to buy tickets to this thing? Who's actually going to go pay money to sit in Cowboy Stadium to watch this thing?
Right. Like, I don't know who wants to actually see it, right? We'll watch it.
Yeah.
Like, on pay-per-view, I wouldn't pay for it. But, you know, it's going to be free on Netflix. Of course, I got Netflix. I pay, what is it, 10 bucks a month or something? Yeah, I'll watch the motherfucker. And I know my kids will want to watch it, right? They'll want to invite their friends so they can watch it, and they're all going to talk about it. He's going to get the publicity, but it's not going to do anything for me. And we're probably going to, just like most of his fights, we're going to wish we didn't watch it after.
We're going to be sad when it's over.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you know, unless Mike Tyson, you know, like I said, go take some fucking trend, bro. Like, let's go, you know, fucking give it all you got, bro. This is your last one.
Yeah, you might as well, dude. I don't care if you get popped for it. Like, they take it away from you. Just go out there and knock his fucking head off. Like, take everything you can and get.
What are they going to do? They're going to pop him for some juice and then call the fight off? I don't. You should be fighting a 60-year-old dude.
Yeah, you should be on everything ever under the sun. Like, that should be part of the rules. You'd be on testosterone, steroids, like, whatever you want. You're 60.
Yeah, bro. Take extra check drops. You don't even know what check drops are, dude.
I do not know what check drops are.
So the theory. Oh, you know, the rumor, I should say, is that when he bit Evander Holyfield's ear, he was on check drops. And what they are, I know the power lifters that take them, it's actually a cat medication that you take for to get your mind like crazy, right? So you take it right before a powerlifting meet, so you just go fucking nuts. Like, you know how power lifters get all fired up and beat their chest and they go out. So it gets your mind extra amped up. The rumor is that's what Mike Tyson was on when he fought Evander Holyfield and bit his ear.
Jesus Christ, man. Check drops. Learn something new every day. That's what this podcast is for. You learn something new every day.
So, yeah, I want him to get on check drops, bring out the young, angry Mike. You know, I want him to walk out with a fucking, you know, black hoodie tee or cut off hoodie. You know, fucking get angry, bro, and beat this motherfucker. Fuckers ass for trying to set this shit up. Get your fucking bag. And then after that, I'm going to root for Jake Paul to go succeed in regular boxing again, you know, but not against Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It's so weird. All right, that's our show. Matt, before we get out of here, man, where can people check you out and always support what you got going on?
At I Am The Immortal, social media, Instagram, Twitter, at The Immortal Coffee. Check it out on social media. And I'm about to go jump in my Redwood sauna. If you ever want a sauna, check them out. Redwood Outdoors CO or redwoodoutdoors.com. And that's, you know, use Immortal 250 to take $250 off of your sauna.
There you go. Get a sauna like Matt Brown and get fucking heated. Like, you're going to take some check drops and get in the sauna and get fucking heated.
Hook some humans, bro.
All right, folks, that's our show for this week. Make sure you check us out on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, over on the best website in the world, MMAfighting.com. For Matt Brown, I am Damon Martin. We will see you guys next week for another edition of The Fighter versus the Writer. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then.
Media Podcast Network.